last week with a team of folks from the church. I did the Rest and Sprint Triathlon. Come on, that's a big deal, right? There's part of our group. There was another guy that did it with us as well. And I'm sure you heard about it because I have not stopped talking about it for a very long time, about how I was doing this triathlon because I was a person that never thought I would actually do one. Never, ever, ever, never thought I would get out there, do that. I had heard about the Rest and Triathlon for years, thought it was a cool thing. Never thought I would be part of it. But a group of folks from the church got together and we said, hey, why don't we try doing this thing? So last Sunday we did it. I woke up, I was pretty nervous. I woke up at 3 o'clock on Sunday morning, ready to go, thinking maybe, just maybe they would cancel it because it was raining, right? It was pouring down rain. And I said, maybe, just maybe they will cancel it. But finally at 5 o'clock, I got out of the bed after literally laying there for 2 hours, excited and thinking about the try. And I went over, got there before our team. So I decided rather than waiting for the team, I would go over to the place where we put our bikes. And I got over there, and as soon as I got to the place where we put our bikes, the guy who I have come to know at the Y, a guy named Ken, came up and he said, hey, are you ready? And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty excited. Ken had actually given me my bike that I was using. He's a guy that I met because our son Nathan swims at the Y, and Ken and I had come to become pretty good friends. He and his wife, Karen, their kids go to school here at Forest Edge. So we met at the YMCA, and we had built a pretty good relationship, and I was thinking as soon as he came up, his time was going to be, first of all, much better than mine, much faster than mine, but I was thinking about how cool it had been to get to know Ken and get to know his story. It was really neat, and as I went over to his house and he gave me the bike, he was telling me about different rides he had done and things, telling me about his family and the importance of that. So over the last 6 months or so, I've gotten to know his story. And then Ken walked away because he was getting ready, and I ran into some folks who worked for Cornerstones because this was benefiting Cornerstones, which is an organization here in Reston that helps work with folks who are homeless or moving out of homelessness. And I loved sitting down and finding out their stories, right? Why were they there today? Why did they join Cornerstones? What were they doing? So I had conversations with different ones of them. And then I started to run into people from our elementary school who were doing the try. I ran into people from our swimming pool that we swim in the summer. I ran into folks from Flores, our church over in Herndon, and more people. It's kind of the Reston thing, right? You run into people you know and you have conversations. And honestly, before the team even showed up, I was filled with a ton of emotion just thinking about all the stories that were coming together to do this race today. Everybody and their journeys and the things people had done. And then our team shows up and we were excited and we're taking pictures and it was really beautiful and really fun. And then I got into the race and the swim was fine. It went really well. The bike was fine. It was really cool. The run ended up being fine. But I'll tell you, the most powerful part of the race was what happened all along the race was all the people that were cheering for us. All the people, like I'd be in the swim and I'd get out of the pool and people were yelling my name and you're so discombobulated right after swimming. You don't even know who it is. People are yelling your number. And then I put on my Tri Restoration shirt and everybody along the way, Mr. Restoration, keep going, keep doing it. You know, 662, you've got this. And people who I had met and heard their stories. And then I get to the run. And along the run, people are handing out water, and they're different people that I know from the Y, where Nathan swims. And they're going, Tim, we're so excited that you're doing this. And people from our summer pool are along the race, and all these people. And y'all, I am not a super emotional person, but I was super emotional. And I get to the end of the race, and I didn't know that this is what had happened. Susan told me later. But Terry Drew, who worships here at Restoration, she had finished, her time was before mine, and she got the whole crowd at the end to start cheering for me. Tim, Tim, Tim. And I'm running up, and y'all, it is a nasty hill at the end of this race. But this energy just fills me. And I cross the line, and Susan and the kids are there, and the kids have signs that they've made. I mean, it's this beautiful moment where I was so encouraged. And I couldn't help during that moment, and frankly for the rest of the day, to think about how all these people not only had their own stories, but they were now part of my story, part of my Rest and Sprint triathlon experience was each of these people. So we've been thinking about this story series, which we're starting today, and it hit me all along the race how much better my story is because other people are part of it. how much better my story is because all of these people have helped formed it. All of these people have been part of it. And then I thought about sort of the sadness of the reality of stories in our culture today, because we often don't actually spend the time to hear them. Do you know that? We might ask a question like, hey, how are you? But for goodness sakes, please don't tell me. Or we might say, hey, I want to learn more about you. And when somebody's 3 minutes in, you say, oh, their story's long. But I think there's something really beautiful, friends, when we stop and we pause and we listen to the story. When we listen for what's going on, we listen for what's happening, we listen to what are the powerful moments. So we're starting this new sermon series, Story. And we're thinking about our own stories, and we're thinking about the stories of those around us, and we're thinking about the story of God and how that all mixes together. How does that all play together? I mean, is your story, does it really matter that other people's stories are happening around you? Does it transform your story? Does it change? I think we've gotten to a place, and I'll speak in our Northern Virginia culture, where we don't pause enough and be still to hear the story. It's as if we don't even want to know it anymore. During this series, we're going to be in a book of the Bible called Hebrews. And unlike many of the other books of the Bible, this is not a letter that someone wrote. This is a sermon that was preached. And it's a long sermon. If you read the book of Hebrews, it's got a lot of chapters in it. But it's a sermon that has the goal of convincing the people to stay the race, to keep going, because these are people who said, well, we thought Jesus was coming back. Jesus said, I'll be back. And these are people who are going, we haven't seen him yet, and we're getting kind of tired. We're tired of being judged. We're tired of being, people chasing after us. We're tired of being in trouble. And the preacher in this sermon says, just hang on. And one of the ways that he does this is in the chapter before we're going to look at this morning. In chapter 11, he lists this long list of people who hung on. People all the way from the beginning who kept going, we know the promised land is coming. We know this new thing is coming. And they waited. And they held on. People whose stories were influencing his story. Or her story, whoever the person who's preaching is. And they're called in this scripture a cloud of witnesses, a group of people who help tell the story. So we're going to look at chapter 12, verses 1 to 4 this morning. It says, so then let's also run the race that is laid out in front of us. Since we have such a great cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let's throw off any extra baggage, get rid of the sin that trips us up, and fix our eyes on Jesus. Faith's pioneer and perfecter. He endured the cross, ignoring the shame, for the sake of the joy that was laid out in front of him, and sat down at the right side of God's throne. Think about the one who endured such opposition from sinners so that you won't be discouraged and you won't give up. In your struggle against sin, you haven't resisted yet to the point of shedding blood. I mean, it's almost like the preacher saying, hey, stop being wusses, right? You haven't shed the blood. But he's talking about this group of onlookers. In this time, there would have been races sort of like our Olympics today. And what would happen was there'd be a stadium full of people who would be shouting and cheering and encouraging every racer as they cross the line. And that's the metaphor that's being brought into this sermon that he's giving. He's saying, as people are running the race, don't put them down. Cheer for them. Encourage them. Be part of their story. Be excited for them as they cross the line. And then he goes on to talk about how Jesus was the one that ran that original race and ran it all the way. He refers to Jesus as the author and the perfecter of faith, saying Jesus has been through the whole gamut. So if the race is hard, he gets it. He's done it. And there are enough things that are going on in our culture, they're saying at this time, I would say today, that beating up someone's story is not helpful, but encouraging someone's story and cheering on someone's story is what we need. And then it goes on to say that at the end of the race, when the last person is finished, there's no one left running. Because at that point, even the onlookers have been encouraged to run the race. Those who are cheering, those who are encouraging. And at the end, of course, he says, Christ is there at the right hand of God. Now, that's a lot of information that I've just shared with you. When I read this scripture a few months ago, it hit me like a ton of bricks. The onlookers are really important. The cloud of witnesses is really important. Their stories are important, and their part of your story is important. I mean, the preacher talks about that. He says, look, if you're getting tired, you need people around you to cheer you on, to encourage you. You need to let them in. You need to listen to their stories. You need to let them be part of yours as well. And I think, friends, our story is powerful. But there are a couple of things I want to give us this morning that if we want to actually dive into this idea of other people's stories, we need to think of. First, we should listen to people's stories. I think my natural inclination when someone is telling their story is to start asking a lot of questions. Right? Well, tell me about this and tell me about this. I don't think we should do that. I think we should pause and we should listen. We should listen for the points of inflection. Where are the moments that were important or powerful in someone's story? Why did that matter to them? Because after we ask, we should take the time to sit and to listen. I've talked about this guy before because I love reading his stuff, but a guy named Doug Padgett does a lot of work on stories. And he talks about the importance of listening to people's stories. And in a book that he writes on evangelism, his thesis is actually that evangelism is not about changing people. Do you hear that? It's not about changing people, but rather it's about helping them resonate with the good news of God. Because all people, he says, are already created in the image of God. We don't have to change that. All people have a story. All people are created in the image of God, and that can be found in their story. He talks about this idea of evangelism that churches uses, and he says, we've got to stop that because our way of doing it isn't working anymore. We think if we just regurgitate a bunch of information, it's going to change people's lives. And his thesis is that actually if we sit and we listen to people's stories, we engage them, we get to know them, that we can help them sense where Christ already is in their life. Then he says this. He says, evangelism is about actively entering into an ongoing, life-giving story with one's entire life. I think too often when I listen to people's stories, I'm listening to them with a goal of changing their story. Padgett says that shouldn't be our goal. Our goal is to listen to people's stories for the place where we can enter, where we can help them see that they are loved, that they are created by God, not to try to transform their stories. And I don't know that I do that intentionally, but I think that's what I do. Friends, how do we listen to somebody's story? We talk less and listen more. We don't try to look for all the comparisons. Well, I know you're telling that, but let me one-up you with my story of my moment in my life. Instead, we listen. We listen for the moments that are important. We say, I hear you, and we sit. I read an article last week that came from this organization called the Acton Institute. It was actually a blog about listening to people in the midst of disasters. And it was talking about Hurricane Harvey and how after Hurricane Harvey happened, people really rallied to bring stuff and to give stuff, because that's what we want to do when something happens, right? Let's donate stuff. Let's get them everything we can. And this article, this blog was talking about how some things actually led to more complications and burdens. The disaster relief expert Juanita Rilling wrote this. She said, generally after a disaster, people with loving intentions donate things that cannot be used in a disaster response and in fact may actually be harmful. For instance, she continued, people have donated prom gowns and wigs, tiger costumes and pumpkins, and frostbite cream to Rwanda, and used tea bags, because you can always get another cup of tea, she said. Used tea bags. Following 1998's Hurricane Mitch, Rilling recalls finding loads of boxes on the airstrip that were filled with winter coats. Do you know where Hurricane Mitch was? It was summertime in Honduras. Winter coats were donated. After the tsunami that hit Indonesia in 2004, beaches in Indonesia were so filled with donated clothes that they actually had to set them on fire because they were covered in mold because it was too much. Y'all, what would happen if in the midst of disaster, we actually sat and listened to people and found out what they needed? I think disaster's just an example of the reality of our lives. We don't sit and listen to people's stories enough. We don't sit and see what the crux of the situation is. We say, okay, I'll pray for you. Because in saying I'll pray for you, it's often stop telling your story. But if we really prayed for people, if we really paused, if we really listened to their story, Padgett claims it'd be a really transformative thing. First step is to listen, but here's the second step. It's to actually help people see where God already is in their story. Reminding people that they are children of God, that they're loved. As United Methodists, we believe in this thing called prevenient grace, which means whether someone believes in God or not, God's already part of their story because God loves them and created them. I think one of the dangers of this thing of being a cloud of witness in somebody else's story, of being part of their story with this concept of God, would be to come to them and try to trivialize how God is in their story. Right? If somebody says, hey, I was almost late to work last week, but an extra train came and I made it, and you say, well, that was God. It might have just been an extra train, friends. That doesn't help anybody's story, right? To say, well, every good thing that happened, like if you made it to work and that was good, that was God, that doesn't help anybody. But I heard somebody recently talk about a conversation that they had with somebody, and in the midst of the conversation, the person said something like, well, that was the universe, and the universe brings all those things together. And that person simply said, you know, I believe that that's God in your life. And it wasn't a trivial thing, and it wasn't a let me beat you down thing. It was simply saying, I believe you are loved, and God is in the midst of your story. And I think that's really, really important, friends, not only to listen, but then to help people see where God already is in the midst of their story. That day of the race, it was cold and it was wet. It was raining. It was upper 50s, lower 60s. And I had to be there. I had to be there because I had told everybody I was doing it. I had to be there because I spent $150 on the race, and I don't ever waste money. But all those people who were along the race handing out cups of water, all those people who were cheering for us, guess what? They didn't have to be there. They were volunteers that came out that morning and stood in the rain and the cold for one reason: to cheer us on, to be our encouragers, to become part of the story. They were complete strangers, but they knew that we would need the extra boost. I wonder how you're going to be part of somebody's story. I wonder how you're going to encourage someone's story and not push it back or beat it down. I wonder how God is calling us to be a cloud of witness for somebody else in someone else's life. What if we can be there to cheer someone on even when it's raining and cold and we don't want to be there? And we do it because they need it, because we know that they need it. What if we listen more and talk less? I don't know, the church might start growing again. What if we actually tried to build relationships with people, to love them and meet them right where they are, outside of judgment, outside of trying to change their story or get them to say a certain thing? I wonder what story would please God coming out of Restoration Church. I wonder what the story should be. What's our collective story? Are we living our lives in such a way that people in the world want to know more about our stories? I want to encourage us to think about that. I want to encourage you to find one person this week, one person, and ask them their story. Doesn't matter who it is. Might even be somebody you don't like all that much. But sit and be still. Listen to what they have to say. And maybe somewhere in the story you'll have an opportunity to remind them they are a deeply beloved child of God.